And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Joan from Spring Valley.
Hi. My name's Joan. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm not paranoid about this. They asked me to use this because their clock is broken. So you see me looking at my cell phone. That's why. So I'm going to hang on to my 20-year token. So anyway, my name is Joan, and I am an alcoholic. And I love seeing all these people that I know in this room. We were out to dinner with a group. There were 10 of us that went out to dinner before the meeting. And it was really fun because, there were a couple of little iffy areas because, a couple of things not quite right with the food. And my sponsor didn't get her meal until she had to take it with her. And the waitress came out and she'd explain that the cook was drunk. Yeah. And we could all relate to that. Yes, all the times we messed up because we were drunk, you know. Anyway, it was good. It was fun. It was nice to have the support of friends. So, you know, I started my drinking, like a whole bunch of other people, when I was a teenager. I had my first drink when I was 15, and it was slow gin. They were passing a bottle of slow gin around. And I felt, kind of warm. And then I felt kind of irritated. And it was a long time before I realized that the reason I was in these rooms, that I realized the reason I was irritated is because there wasn't enough of it. But we were, back in high school, we'd go to parties and we'd do all that stuff. And we'd, park the cars in a circle with the headlights on and everybody tuned to the same radio station and have a party out in the middle of a field. You know, there was this great spot up on Mount Helix that the house hadn't been built on yet. And, you could see the cops drive by. It was great. But, I always, always was affected by alcohol. From the very beginning, I was affected by alcohol. And I look back on it, and I know that I was born as an alcoholic. I didn't cross the line. I was alcoholic right from the get-go. And I had all these feelings of insecurity that we have, and I have all that, that little stubborn thing, and I have that little self-centered thing, and I have all those little character defects that alcoholics have. But I grew I have a lot of holistic beliefs because I'm a holistic health practitioner, and one of my beliefs is that fetuses can hear, and they know what's going on around them, and they experience their mother's emotions and all that stuff. Well, I was conceived when my sister disabled me was 5 weeks old, and my mother was not thrilled with that. And as a grown woman, I know that I would not have been thrilled with that either. But it did have an effect on me. And the fact that my sisters used to all run away from me and ditch me and do all that stuff and lock me out of the house had an effect on me. But they knew, they had heard my mother say that I was the unwanted one. So they treated me like the unwanted one. And that, on top of being born alcoholic, is a mess. It's just a mess. But I did really well in school. I used to help the sister above me with her schoolwork, as a matter of fact. We all treated her like she was the youngest in the family. And it was just an odd little situation. Nobody beat anybody. We got spanked, but nobody beat anybody, and nobody did anything like that. But my dad ignored all four of us, not just me. He worked really hard, and he played hard, too. He raced boats, and he fished, and he did all this stuff. And he deserved to have his time. But we didn't get any attention. And so when I got a little older and I started getting attention from the fellas, and then I thought that was really cool. Wow, I'm finally getting attention here. And I was popular in school, and I dated fairly early. Actually, I dated long before my mother let my other sisters date, and I didn't know why. But it was just an odd little childhood. I didn't have any self-esteem. I didn't have anything like that. I didn't have any real connection. I never really felt that connected to my family. One of the times, one of my memories from childhood was I was in the Bluebirds, which is like the Brownies, and one of the leaders asked if my mom could help with a project, and I told her I didn't have one. And I believed it. I believed that I was just this little person who hung out with this family. And they were sisters, and I was just this other person, and that was their mother, and I didn't know. And I could tell by the look on that woman's face that I had said the wrong thing. And she asked one of my sisters, and my sister looked at me like, what the hell are you doing? And I said, you know, and then my mother got there, and she started paying attention to me. But then she really did start paying more attention to me, because then she realized, you know, that she had really had kind of neglected me. And, you know, when you have 4 kids in 5 years, you're busy. You know, and you just don't have time for that one, you know. You don't have time for any of them, really. And so I just kind of grew up just not thinking much of myself and all that stuff. And then I got involved with guys, and they liked me, you know. And I was good in school, and so I got good vibes from my teachers and from the kids in school. And we played, and I hung out at my friends' houses a lot. Their mothers used to have to tell me to go home, you know. But anyway, so I got into junior high, and things started being a lot of fun, and we had dances in junior high too, and that was fun, and I loved to dance. I've always loved to dance. My sisters used to make me lead, so, you know, but anyway, got into junior high and was having a lot of fun, then moved into high school and was still having a lot of fun and going to parties and stuff. And then I, of course, fell madly in love with this fellow, and he was, you know, we were going to get married. You know, we were like 15 and 18, and we were going to get married. But then his dad decided we were too serious. We were just getting too serious. Well, we'd already gotten too serious, you know. But he broke up with me and just crushed me, absolutely crushed me. And so I just kind of moped around that whole summer waiting for somebody to fix me, you know. My mom had given me one message my mother gave me is that, you know, if the dog died, you replace the dog. You know, so I was looking for somebody to fix me or to replace that guy or do something. And one of my friends introduced me to this guy with this great-looking truck. And I thought, you know, that old boyfriend, he'll be jealous of this guy's truck. So I went out with him. Well, he was like 5 years older than I was and faster than I was, and I ended up pregnant. And so I was 16 and pregnant in high school, and I wasn't going to tell anybody. I was just going to go up to the Door of Hope. Remember the Door of Hope? And had my baby, and then I thought, well, how am I going to support this baby, you know? So I kind of was like stalling, trying to figure out what to do, and my mom said, you know, it looks like you're pregnant. I mean, I'm like 4.5 months along by this time, you know, it's like starting to show. And I said, yeah, I am. And they made me marry him, even though they knew I didn't want to. And it was kind of like, well, they think more of the family name than they do me, poor me, you know. And it wasn't, you know, it had already been party, and I'd already had the first drink and the parties and stuff like that, and I'd already had a couple blackouts. I got dragged out of Oscars and El Cajon. Remember Oscars and El Cajon? You know, we'd cruise the El Cajon Boulevard, we'd go clear up to Oscars by, 40th Street, wherever it was, and then all the way out there, and there was a Dobbs Drive-In and a Mesa, and we were really cool, you know. But I was gawking around looking to see who was there and kind of bumped the car in front of me. The guy didn't like it, and he got out of his car yelling, and I got belligerent because I'd been drinking. And the cops were called, and I got drug out of there in handcuffs. Yeah. I don't think I was quite 18 yet, because they just took me to the substation and called my folks, and they came and got me. So I was married, and I got married after I was pregnant, naturally. And then when he decided it was okay to hit me, I still had just enough self-esteem that I said, no, this isn't good. And so I called the folks, and it was able to come back home with my little one, my little girl. And it was like, geez, not good. Going back to high school as a divorced mother in 1960. It was like, it was not as common as it is now. I was a leader, you know, on the forefront. And so I was there, you know, I felt kind of weird, you know. And so now I'm this divorced woman in high school. But at least I got to finish my high school, you know, and which was very helpful to getting a job and doing all that, supporting kids and stuff. And when I finally got out of high school and got the job, my mom told me it was time for me to move, because I had just left my daughter with her, and I'd go out and party. And, you know, sometimes I wouldn't be getting home till the next morning, you know, because I partied hard all the time. I wasn't one of those people who had a couple of drinks and went home. And so got my own place, and then some friends introduced me to this other guy who drank like I did, you know. So we got married. And we, I just kind of like went along, you know. And so then we, I was like, what is she thinking? But so we had, and we had a little daughter. And then, you know, and I got, you know, I was wrecking cars and getting thrown in jail during this time too. And I got tired of his drinking. I towed the car. Guy cut me off on the freeway, and I tried to get out of it, but, you know, I almost got arrested that time too, but I didn't because there was a witness that there was a car that cut me off. But, you know, I just, and then I got picked up for drunk during that marriage too. I was trying to get home because we had partied all night long, and he went off with a guy somewhere, and I was like, and I was going to walk home from, like, Marina Boulevard to Pacific Beach. I was still, like, half in the bag, and I'm staggering down the street, and, you know, and people called. They thought there was something wrong with me. Well, there was. I was wrong. But anyway, you know, so I left him for his drinking, and went out back home to La Mesa. We were living in Claremont, and I went back to the La Mesa, Spring Valley area, and hooked up with a friend of mine who was single, and she had a little gal, too. But and of course I had my two, and so I lived with her for a little while until I got my own place. And she was doing bar scene by now. And you know, when I was married, we'd have parties at the house, and we'd go out and drink once in a while to the bars and stuff, and dance. But it wasn't all the time. I didn't drink all the time. You know, I didn't drink all the time when I was a teenager or when I was in my, this is my second marriage by now. And but the bars really attracted me because I was getting that attention. You know, and plus they'd buy you drinks. It wouldn't even cost you money, you know. Cost you a lot of other stuff, but it wouldn't cost you money. And so, yeah. So, you know, that went on for a while. And I thought, you know, gotta get some kind of fix here. So I married a bartender. That's good. Don't you think that's a good idea, Barb? So, you know, he liked to drink a lot. He drank, but he was one of those drinkers that could maintain. He would just like sip slowly all day. He wasn't like me, but he just like once he started, he had to guzzle it down, you know. And it was kind of nice for a while, but a very short while. We only were married for 6 months, and decided that we'd kind of messed up and kind of screwed up a good friendship. So here I am, divorced 3 times. And I just, you know, I'm going to the bars, and I'm leaving my kids alone, and I'm, you know, doing all that stuff that drinking women do, alcoholic women anyway do. And it just was not good. Just was not good. And my oldest daughter got, well, one time I started out on a Saturday and went until Monday morning. And my kids were home alone. Yeah. And they were 12 and 8 at the time. And my oldest daughter was real tired of babysitting and being the mom for the family while I went out and did whatever the hell I was doing, you know. And I worked, and I brought home the gravy, and I, you know, put the roof over the head, and I thought that I deserved to be able to have fun, you know. It's like other people do it. But other people didn't have two little girls at home. And so she got real fed up with it, and she moved up to her dad, where her dad lived. Well, I had never told her that her dad was alcoholic. I never told her that he was kind of mean. And she found out the hard way. And after about a year and a half, she moved back down with me. And by this time, I was living with somebody, and my youngest daughter and I, and she didn't get along with this guy that I was living with. And one time we had a fight. He said something about her that I didn't like, and she had a friend over, and we came storming in the door. He was fighting, and I just headed for the washroom to get it down where nobody could hear, and it had me cornered in the washroom, and I just blasted him with this iron, knocked him cold. Oh. Knocked him cold. I thought, oh, God, I hope he didn't die. Oh, I hope he's okay. But I didn't know what to do. So I went and did the dishes. You know? I didn't, you know? Yeah, you can't just stand there watching them, see if they're okay. And I didn't want to go in the living room where she was with her friend because I didn't want to embarrass her. God knows I'd embarrassed this child enough through the years. So, you know, and pretty soon he kind of comes walking out of the, you know, like this. And I said, I'm going to move. So I moved, took the girls over, you know, the other end of Santee. And actually, he came over. I had to call the sheriffs to get him out of that place. He wanted to come over there, too. I said, no, we're not doing that. You know, I mean, I'd had to call the sheriff a couple times on guys to get him away from me because I had such great taste by the end of, you know. They were real winners. And I was a real winner, too. You know, how the guys, the people we're with reflect to who we are, you know. And so we moved to the other end of Santee. And I was still going to bars. And I, when I moved out from him, I started going back to school again so I could really start making some money. And I was really trying to get myself together. And it's still not good. But I was trying, you know, and I was working. And I had a pretty good job. And still bringing in the gravy and doing all that stuff. And I just still had to go to these bars, though. I still needed those bars, you know. It was getting to the point where I was drinking a lot, you know. And it wasn't even all the way out of my system. Maybe 2 days a week it was out of my system, and that was about it. And I was still getting arrested here and there, you know, and still wrecking cars here and there and all that stuff. Love those drunk tanks. And all of a sudden, I was sitting at good old Petricelli's in El Cajon, and here comes this guy I hadn't seen before. I thought, well, he looks kind of interesting. And he'd just broken up with his wife, and he thought I looked kind of interesting. We got married the day after his divorce was final. We're just this practicing alcoholic out there, you know, doing the deal, thinking that that's what you're supposed to do, you know. You just marry the next guy that comes along, they'll fix you. They're going to fix you eventually. And I was not thinking real well of myself at that point, but I started feeling better. And we started actually having kind of a pretty normal life. And he drank at home, so then I was allowed to drink at home now, too, you know. So I was drinking pretty much everywhere by this time. And we did an addition on the house, and we had friends over for cards, and, you know, we looked pretty normal, you know. But I kept drinking, and I just kept drinking. And he was one that could maintain, you know, and he would hold it together. And he drank a lot, but he could still hold it together. And we'd go out to dinner, and I'd have a glass of wine, and I didn't want to eat because I had a buzz on. And that would make him mad, you know. He was paying for this great meal I was having, and I wouldn't even eat. But we get into these big fights because of my drinking. And it just didn't dawn on the man that I needed to not drink at all. Because we get in a huge fight, and he wouldn't speak to me for 3 or 4 days. And so I quit, you know. I just, like, hang on to whatever and just not drink, you know. And then he'd reward me by bringing home a bottle of wine. You know, because he didn't want for me not to drink. He just wanted me to drink like a lady. Well, there is no way that I ever drank like a lady. You know, there might have been a couple of times in my life that I had one glass of wine. That was, you know, that's how rare it was. Once you put alcohol in this body, you didn't know what was going to happen. I'd come out of it in Tijuana. You know, I was like, how the hell did I get here? I'm sitting there talking Spanish to this person. I had a little high school Spanish, but, you know, not enough to talk to somebody. So. But, you know, I'd get up, you know, haul myself back, go to work, you know. I was unreal. It's like, God, when I look back on it, when I was asked to speak here, I told him, you know, let's do it in October, because I knew I was coming up on 20, and I knew my mind would be going, you know. And so I said, I'll do it in October, because then I can do this review and really see what it was like. Well, I had forgotten a lot of stuff, you know. That's grace, I think. But, you know, we have to remember. I've been going down to H&I for a lot of years, down at Detox, and I love that commitment because it shows me that my disease is still out there kicking butt, you know? It just is kicking ass everywhere. And I'm reminded of that, and I don't have to go and do it again myself because of that. But I was still doing it. So anyway, where was I? I was married to Joe. Okay, that's my fourth husband. And we were doing pretty well, but I was still drinking like mad, you know, and he'd get really upset. And we were getting pretty close to divorce after 10 years of marriage. And I decided that we needed a vacation. And so I booked a a trip through the Grand Canyon on one of the big rafts. It was great. God, it's beautiful. If you can do that, do it. And it just, and they, you know, we'd hike up little tributaries and we'd do all this stuff, and it was just wonderful. And they didn't have booze. They had like enough wine that you could each have a glass of wine with dinner. Well, who wants one glass of wine? So we didn't really drink on that, you know, and that really kind of saved us. It's like he couldn't drink and I could have one or two glasses of wine and nothing more. And so it's like, wow, it changed. It made us both reflect on our relationship, and it made him realize that his drinking might be a little bit involved. And by the time we got back from that trip, we were back on pretty good terms again. And then about a month, maybe 2 months after we got back from that trip, he got sick. And, you know, we didn't think too much of it. It kind of looked like flu. But it kept hung around for a while, and he got really weak. And so we took him to the doctor, and they couldn't figure out what's wrong. And then he ended up at the hospital, and they couldn't figure out what's wrong. And then they sent him home, and then he went back to the hospital. And then they told me he was okay. And so I went home to get some sleep. And about a little after 5 in the morning, I knew he died, because his soul was in the room with me. And I went, dang, what's a person supposed to do? You know, he was only there for about a minute, and then he was gone. And I went, what is a person supposed to do under a circumstance like this? I'm sitting on the edge of the bed, and the phone rang, and they told me that they called a code. And I didn't tell him that he was gone. You know, I said, okay. And I called our respective children. We had 6 between us. And we all met down at the hospital. And, you know, one of my friends' husbands was on the code team. And when he saw me walk in, man, he started working real hard again. But, you know, he was gone, you know. And I had a lot of people around me for quite a while. And then they were gone, you know. Everybody's right there for the first week or two that, you know, after somebody dies. And then they were gone, and then I started really drinking again. And my kids even put in a garden, had this big area on one side of the house, and one of my son-in-laws, I was the only son-in-law at the time, I guess, he tilled the soil, and they planted in, they put in corn, and they put in zucchini, and the tomatoes, and all this stuff. And I'd come home from work, and I'd pour a glass of wine, and I'd go out there, and I'd pull some weeds, and I'd, you know, pick the little vegetables, and I'd just suck it down, and I was doing this, you know. And then I go in the house, and I just sit there, and those vegetables would rot. You know? But it was a really good effort on their part. They really thought it was going to save me, or at least help save me. But it didn't. And so I started going out to drink again, and that didn't work, because now I'm falling on my tush, and I haven't got anybody to replace these cars that I'm wrecking. So I became kind of a solitary drinker, and I'd be sitting at the dining room table, and I'd be sucking down boxes of wine by now, you know, because nobody could tell. You know, you can't see the level going down. You know, they can't tell. You just put them in the trash compactor. No evidence. Never dawned on me. All they had to do is look at me to see how much I was drinking. So anyway, I'm sitting there, and one night I'm just like, I'm so miserable by this time. My own best thinking got me so miserable by this time that I couldn't even get drunk. And I would just be sitting there going, poor me, poor me, poor John, oh God, oh, it was pathetic. And I would be listening to sad Western songs. Oh God, poor Joan. And I'd still be going to work though. I'd go to work and I'd come home and I'd just start sucking it down, you know. And I don't know how much I was drinking, but I was, you know, starting to get the shakes in the morning and all that stuff. And I was walking up the stairs to the bedroom one night, and just as I hit the landing, I said, God, help me. And this beam of energy surrounded me. It was like it was saying, yes. She finally asked, you know. It was like, beam me up, Scotty. You know, remember how they used to do that? That was like scary, you know. And so I went to bed. And, you know, I wish I could tell you that I hadn't drank from then on, but I have. I drank for another 2.5 months after that. And one day my work sent me up to Burbank for some class or something. And on the way back, my plane was canceled. My flight was canceled, so I had to wait. And, of course, you wait in a bar. You can't wait in a chair like other people out there, you know. Had to go to that bar. So I was half in the bag when I got home. and my oldest daughter and her husband and three children at the time, she has four, but she only had three at the time, were staying at my house because they were between escrows. We sold one house and we're buying another one. And I came home half in the bag, and she and I, my oldest daughter and I, got into it. And I stormed out, you know, and went to the bar. And I have no clue. I just kind of remember storming out, and I think I called a cab or something. I don't know what the hell I did, but I got, you know, I did something, because the next morning I was laying on the couch in the living room, and the sun was beating in on me. I had this horrendous hangover because I started with wine in the afternoon up in Burbank, and I always switch to Drambuie at the bars, and I just, that'll give you a hangover no matter if you're alcoholic or not. And I'm just laying there going, oh, God. And my little five-year-old granddaughter came bouncing into the bedroom, I mean, to the living room. And she said, hi, Mama. And I just growled at her, you know, like, get out of here. I don't feel well. I don't know what I said. I don't even know if I really said words or if I just gave her a dirty look and, you know, she vanished. But she got this look on her face, this little hurt look on her face that I had seen for years with my own daughters, years with my own daughters. And for some reason, it hit me. My God, Joan, you're starting on another generation. Mm-hmm. Whew, man. Well, thank God I had been court-ordered to AA. I got court-ordered to attend AA meetings. And I felt sorry for the poor people. You know, they had to go there, these meetings, and they had to talk about their drinking, and they had to do all this stuff. They obviously did not go to really any good meetings, or I would have known better. But and I had even been down to courthouse in El Cajon, and they had an H&I committee come in there and speak to us in the courtroom. And we were all there, and the H&I panel is up there where the lawyers' tables are and stuff. And I'm thinking, God, these poor people, they have to do that. I love my H&I commitment. I love my H&I commitment. So, and I love AA meetings, too, but this a little while longer, right? But anyway, so I was so pickled by this time that I didn't even know to look up AA in the book, you know. But my daughters were willing to help. I'm just finally ready. Let's do it as soon as we can here. And there was an AA meeting at the church that they attend. Excuse me. I had a little drink here. And so they told me where it was. I mean, I knew where the church was, but they told me whereabouts in the church it was and what time it was and everything. And I just kind of like vibrated my way into meeting that night. And it was okay. You know, it was okay. I was like, you know, they were looking at me like, is she going to be okay? And I'm thinking, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be okay, because I was really shaken and I could barely talk. My voice was like, ooh. And because it was a very emotional thing, you know, give up your best friend like that. So luckily there was a woman in the group that knew that I needed a real AA meeting. And she told me to go to a real women's AA meeting. And I did. Thank God I did. And I ended up at this women's meeting out in Hahana in El Cajon in Lakeside. And I'm walking in this meeting, and there's the gal that I worked with at Kaiser. Joan, she was so excited to see me. Oh, I thought, what's she so damn excited about? You know, I mean, she was glad to be there. I wasn't glad to be here yet. But then I walked in, you know, I got in that meeting, and I'm sat down, and I started hearing this, you know, what they were sharing. And they knew what was going on with me, and because they'd been there, you know. They might not have been everywhere I'd been, but they, you know, knew what was going on with me. And they also told me that there was a solution. And I went, dang, I like this, you know. And it was a pretty easy solution. It wasn't even that hard. You know, you go to some meetings and you work some steps and you do, you know, help other people. Pretty good deal. So I got a sponsor. Didn't get one right away. I'd be miserable for a little longer. And I got a sponsor and you know, it was good. It started, you know, really started working for me right away. I was like on this little pink cloud. And I developed a relationship with the higher power, and I'd go, what the hell is going on? And I did. I talked to God like that all the time. I said, okay, I don't know what you want me to do. You better let me know. You know, and I'd be wandering around the house talking like that and driving talking like that. And it worked. Got me in touch. Father Bill, I met Father Bill's sponsor. one time, and he said the reason he picked him is because the man would go out in the yard and just rail at God, and he said, but he knew there was somebody there, you know. So hey, so I was on my way with a higher power. And then Hugh McCoy, who's been dead but had more than 50 years, told me that I needed to get a loving God in my life, because I didn't have a loving God. I had a punishing God, and I had a hell fire and brimstone one, because when we went to church, we had to walk down to this little Baptist church down in Costero, and they taught that we were all sinners and that we were all going to go to hell, and you know, and this little kid's gone, I'm screwed no matter what, you know, I haven't done anything even. So I finally did get a loving God in my life through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, through working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and through attending the meetings. I could see you guys. I could see the happiness in the rooms. I could see the light in the eyes. I was like, there's something going on here. I'm sticking with it because it feels good. It just felt good to me. And it felt good not to drink. You know, I didn't have the shakes that much. I was like, you know, a couple of days and I was okay. And I was like, God, I feel so much better. I was starting to stand up straight again, you know. I was starting to think a little better of myself, you know. I can do this, right? So then I got in another relationship. Yes, of course, you know. They told me not to get in a relationship for a year. And I was in mourning anyway, so a year worked out okay for me. But as soon as I was up, man, there I was. And met him at the spring roundup. And, you know, sat dancing, you know. So, anyway, we went together for a while, and then we broke up, and I was, you know, upset by it. And it was really my fault, because I was so immature, and we still broke up, and I was still upset. But I didn't drink. I didn't have to drink. But I did get a therapist, and I did start really working on me. You know, I was working the steps with a sponsor, and now I was working with a therapist, too. And the therapist, actually, I'd worked with more than one therapist over the years, and it doesn't work as well if you're drunk. It doesn't. Even if you just have a couple glasses of wine, it doesn't work as well. You don't have to be drunk, you know, just still drinking doesn't work as well. But anyway, so I got this therapist, and we worked together, and it really helked. And she was a Holocaust survivor, actually. And so she, you know, she'd been through some stuff herself. But anyway, so when I broke up with that fellow, it's like I fell back into old behavior. And so I married the first guy that came along, because he'd fix me, you know. I was trying to fix myself, but it wasn't fast enough. So, you know, I'll just get married to this guy and he'll fix me. Well, we were married for 6 years. But the only reason we were married for 6 years is because I would not admit that I had made a mistake. But the day after our wedding, I knew that I made a mistake, because it was like coming out of a blackout. It's like, crap, now what have I done? You know? Like, this is the fifth husband, for crying out loud. So, went with that one for a while. Didn't drink, though. Didn't drink. Kept going to meetings. Kept working with the sponsor. Kept doing the stuff. You know, by this time, I'm starting to help other people. It's, you know, I'm real easy to talk to because I've been through so much and nothing shocks me. And then we got divorced, finally. We got divorced. And I was doing really well. I did really well for about 3 years. And then that second guy came along. Came back into my life. I went, dang. But I thought, well, maybe I'll do better this time because I've had all this therapy, you know, and all that stuff. Well, you know, we're still friends. We realized that we couldn't live together. You know, it wasn't working. So we just said, you know, bye, see you later. And we still talk on the phone and we're good, you know, which is a sign of growth, you know. And then it finally dawned on me that there are other relationships. You know, I would always thought of relationships just as male-female, you know. So it finally dawned on me I needed to work on all these other relationships, like being a daughter, being a mother, being a sister, being a friend, too, you know. But I had hidden for years because of my drinking. I mean, they didn't even bother calling me anymore because I either wouldn't answer the phone or I was, you know, half in a bag. You know, one time I called my late husband's mother. I don't know what time it was, but I was drunk. I don't remember. I got a letter from her. Please don't call late at night, Joan. We can't understand you. Y'all, you know, bad. It's not good. Not good stuff at all. But anyway, so you know, we parted friends, and I've been really. I love this program. I love what it does for me. I love what it does for other people. I've learned to work the steps in all my affairs, not just those affairs, you know. With even, you know, as a client, as when I work with clients, I got enough self-esteem from working these steps that when I decided that I couldn't be a secretary at that place anymore, I actually went to school and became a holistic health practitioner, which is a wonderful thing. It turned into a career for me. And it was also a really big healing process for me. And after I needed some continuing ed units, so I was flipping through this book. I don't have any idea how I got a schedule from UCSD Extension in my hand, but I did, and I was flipping through it, and I could pick up some CEUs by taking a course in Healing Touch, which is an energy system program. And so I also became a certified Healing Touch practitioner. And I was telling a friend last night, I took all of those courses twice, one for me as a person and one for me as a practitioner. And it was fantastic healing, you know, it helped me heal so much. And it also gave me a really good career. And so when I finally hung on to that job that I had as a secretary and built clients, you know, in part-time. And then when I had enough years in, it's that magic number, you know, you hit the right age and the right number of years of service, you get to retire. Well, I turned 55 on Friday and gave him my notice on Monday. And it felt so good. Oh, my God, it felt so good. And I had my own business. I had it part-time for all that time. And then I'd had it full-time for 10 years. And as a matter of fact, I just went semi-retired because life is so good. Life is so good for me. Because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous gave me hope, they told me that I could be fixed if I worked for it, you know? Not if I said, Steve, will you fix me? No, if I worked for it, if I worked on me, then I could be fixed. If I connected with a God, a loving God in my life, then it would work. You know, and it has. I've received so many blessings. Oh, my God, you wouldn't believe. If I stood here and told you, you would go, she's exaggerating. But I'm not. I have received so many blessings. But, you know, I was married and divorced in sobriety, which wasn't a blessing. And I did have cancer in sobriety, which wasn't a blessing. But I got to use the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous on that, too. I was powerless over that by myself. I reached out for help. I did the steps all the way through on it. Cleaned my own part of it up. Did the emotional, spiritual work on it. All that stuff. I went back to work 2 weeks after my surgery. You know? I mean, it's blessings, blessings, blessings. And it's all because I finally got willing to take suggestions. I finally could hear people when they talked to me. Instead of just, I have to do this my way. I have to get there. It has to be, nope. You know, and just ignore everything else. I finally could hear. I could finally feel again. I could experience. I finally got my intuition again. You know, it's just been fantastic, fantastic. And I, you know, if you're new, hang on your hats. You know, just put yourself in allow mode and let God work through you. It's fantastic. Thank you very much.